the guy who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gijp.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself, Jay and Buster, will look back on yesterday's disappointing 1-0 defeat to Hearts. We'll preview the midweek fixture against Partick Thistle and also look ahead to the weekend's clash against Kilmarnock at Rugby Park. Welcome along, guys.
Yes. Alright, how do you?
Well, Jay, I'll start with yourself, and I know neither of you guys were at Tynecastle yesterday, and you should think yourself very, very lucky that that is the case. As abject a performance as I've seen from a Motherwell side in quite some time, very much. It was a nothing game, really, to be fair. I think a 0-0 would have possibly been a more accurate reflection on the dross 90 minutes that went before us. But to start a run that we went to three games that we described in the podcast last week as three important away games, it's a disappointing start, certainly.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think we said last week, but certainly when we've spoke in the past about, you know, the games we've got in December, although it is a tricky couple of games, with, you know, matches away from home, if you can go to the likes of Pittodrie and win, then, you know, I was looking at Tynecastle as a winnable game, or at least a game that we could take a point from, particularly because Hearts seem to be struggling to grind out victories, you know, drawing a good few games recently. So it was just, yeah, a disappointing result. Obviously, as you say, I did make it to the game, but I did manage to catch a lot of the live commentary, both, you know, the Motherwell one that they do and on 810, and both, you know, both streams of coverage made it sound just as tragic as you have. It was soul destroying to listen to. It just sounded like a terrible game. All in all, and obviously you'll be able to comment a wee bit more having witnessed it, but you know, it perhaps shows that maybe the strength and depth that we kind of thought that we did have, maybe we don't. You know, we were obviously missing the likes of Carlson, Hartley, Moult, and you know, as I said, it'll be obviously down to yourself to confirm whether it's the case or not, but you know, at least on the face of it, it does seem as though we missed those kind of guys.
Yeah, but Jay's point is very prevalent in the cause wasn't aided by Chris Cadden having to go off with a hamstring injury as well in the first half. Gil Bigorama came on, and to be fair, I think he was one of the few players in a claret and amber jersey yesterday that would have got pass marks. That being said, if you remove Louis Moult from the equation, we know that that's a scenario we're going to face sometime in the very near future. Ryan Bowman doesn't look like an out-and-out striker. Alex Fisher still badly lacking confidence for me more than anything else. I don't kind of subscribe to the fact that he's not got it, because I think there is a player there, but he was very, very disappointing yesterday before going off with what I believe is concussion at half-time. So that's another player from the squad lost. You're maybe going into Wednesday night's game at Thistle, who themselves suffered a very heavy defeat at Rugby Park yesterday without five or six players that you would really want to see in the 18, but three or four certainly that you would want to see in the starting 11.
Yeah, it just sounds like it was, you know, just a shite day in general. The you know, the football on display didn't sound very good. The result was obviously awful. We lost Cadden through, I don't know how serious Cadden's injury even is, but, you know, if he can't maybe play again midweek or, you know, the weekend after. Fisher's obviously, as you say, got concussion, so I assume he'll be out for a couple of weeks. It just sounds like a really shite Saturday. Even, you know, I'll be honest with you, I haven't even really brought myself to watch the highlights either. I watched the goal, you know, sort of went through the highlights, looked for where the goal was, watched what happened, and then I watched Stevie Robinson's interview, and, you know, as he says, it looks like Alan Campbell got half and two for them to win the ball. And then, you know, I couldn't really see it for the highlights, but Stevie Robinson's claiming that there was a handball by Lafferty as well as he turned it around. So it just sounds like a really, really bad day at the office. And as you says, we're going into this game against Partick Thistle, who again are coming off a bad result, as you say, against next week's opponents, who are flying as well. Well, who seem to be flying at least anyway at times. They're sort of hot and cold, but I think, you know, it's a game that we really need to actually pick up some points here. And it's Firhill's always been a very difficult place for us to go. I think if you look at the results between ourselves and Partick Thistle, whoever's at home, generally wins. And you know, that's not something we really need. Again, as I say, looking a wee bit forward to Kilmarnock as well, it's a tough set of fixtures. So hopefully, some of the injuries aren't as bad as they could be, and hopefully, you know, we're not that many players down. As you says, we're missing Ollie Moult. You're talking about it. We're going to possibly without him in the future anyway. We're definitely going to be without him within the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, as he says, if he's got a hamstring, you pulled a hamstring, whatever it is he's done. And on Fisher as well, I obviously can't judge him on his, you know, 45 minutes there. You said he looked poor, which, to be fair, I don't think, from what I've heard, the MD looked very decent at all. But I'm kind of getting I mentioned it in a couple of the forums as well. Every time I see Fisher play, he misses a sitter or two, even for the under-20s. He seems to miss his 6 yards all the time. And as you said, he's, you know, we've seen him for Inverness when he got that run at the end of the season, scoring quite a few goals. A couple of them, I think about half of them were against us. But I'm getting a bit worried about, you know, whether or not it's starting to affect him. He basically needs the ball to hit him in the arse and go into the goals, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the problem is, we've talked about strikers in the past, guys like, for talking to Chris Porter, who struggled initially, Michael Higdon struggled initially and got a wee scrappy goal to get him going, and then that he never looked back after that. We're now at December, and I just don't really see Fisher being afforded the opportunities that these guys had, because he had a wee spell at the start of the season where he was in and out. He's not managed to score then, even kind of games like the cup games against Berwick Rangers and Edinburgh City. These should be the games that you look to start your account and kick on from there. He's not managed to do so, and for that reason, I kind of struggle to see that we could have any sort of dependency on Alex Fisher when the time comes that Louis Moult goes.
As you said, he was in and out of the team, and he did play well in quite a few of the games that he was involved in. You know, he showed some nice touches, some nice teamwork as well. But as I say, we basically need sort of like a, again, going back to the players who've, you know, struggled at first. I think Lukas Jukovic, his first goal hurt him in the balls, or against Falkirk or whatever. You need something like that to happen, I think. And I do think that there's a good player in Alex Fisher there, but as I say, you know, the amount of times I've seen him miss for 6 yards, it's starting to worry me a wee bit.
Jay, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I'm quite keen to stress as well, I wouldn't actually have any complaints with what I've seen of Alex Fisher in terms of endeavour, and even actually some of his play in the build-up has been very good and very promising. But my issue is that we're going to be losing a player like Louis Moult, who has scored 18 goals the last two seasons. It's a very, very difficult task for Stephen Robinson to replace someone like that. And for me, I don't think Alex Fisher is that sort of player that will be able to come in and score regularly and score the goals that perhaps are the difference between a top six and bottom six. Certainly in the last couple of seasons, it's been the difference between staying up and being relegated.
Oh no, that's it. I mean, obviously, Buster mentioned the facts that Alex Fisher, you know, still played well in those early games, even though he wasn't scoring. And I agree entirely with that. I do. I think he's a good striker at this level. He holds up the ball well. You know, does a lot of work. Never stops running. Even he's you know, half decent with the ball at his feet when he's out wide. When he goes out into the flanks and things like that. But I think what's happened is we've signed Alex Fisher on the back, you know, on the back of his spell, in which he was quite a prolific goal scorer. And I think we've maybe discovered that he isn't a prolific goal scorer. You know, he had a purple patch there, but he isn't a natural replacement for Louis Moe. I would suggest perhaps, if anything, he's more likely to be more in the Bowman kind of role. So you would perhaps look at Louis Moe up front, partnering either Ryan Bowman or Alex Fisher, rather than Fisher and Bowman being your forward line. So it's certainly something that I think we need to look at. You know, if and when Louis Moe moves on, I think that there possibly does need to be a replacement brought in, because, you know, you're right, for even if Fisher, you know, does score the kind of scrappy goal that Buster's talking about and starts to, you know, get that, you know, that kind of monkey off his shoulder and can then go and start, you know, kind of scoring a couple of goals, I still don't see a prolific goal scorer. Certainly don't see a Louis Moe there. Perhaps Fisher could go on to partner, whether it's Moe or a replacement, and do so successfully. But I think it's something we need to look at. And I'd be surprised if we aren't already. You know, Stephen Robinson has proven, I think, quite conclusively since he took over, that he's well organised. He knows what he wants to do in terms of recruitment. He's very in-depth in terms of the type of players he wants to bring in. So I think it would be crazy to assume that we're not already looking at it. I would imagine that Stephen Robinson will have a big list of targets just sitting waiting for whenever Louis moves on. So I would be surprised if we don't bring someone in. But, you know, who knows? I mean, you've mentioned guys there. I remember, you know, Buster mentioned Zhukovic. He was another kind of guy that was getting game time, and you were thinking, well, why are we giving this loanee, you know, time when we could be playing our own youngsters or whatever, because he's not cutting it. And then you get that scrappy goal and suddenly, you know, it's a completely different player. So, you know, he's certainly not a lost cause. A lot could happen with just one goal, you know, and the confidence rockets and suddenly he could have a purple patch. But I do still think that it's, you know, an area that we will need to and probably invest in, whether it's, you know, a small fee again to, you know, a Louis Moe type signing. You know, it's something I think we need to make available, because we've seen, you know, even yesterday, we miss Louis Moe when he's not in the team. And to go into the second half of the season, if Louis is to move on in January without Louis Moe, and more importantly, without a replacement for Louis Moe, then I would agree. I don't really see Fisher or Bowman being the type of player needed to kind of take up the mantle.
I'm just actually, as we speak just now, I just actually saw the goal for the first time on Sports Scene. The tackle on Campbell's an absolute shocker. It's certainly a free kick, but Cedric Kiepre certainly doesn't cover himself in glory as well. He kind of gets swivelled into a hole and falls over, and Lafferty's put it away pretty well. But Campbell actually comes out at the tackle with their number 11 on the ball, goes forward, and then I think it's Goncalves, just brings him down. It's certainly a free kick. Kiepre needs to be stronger for the goal, though. Yeah, pretty disappointing one to lose. There was a kind of interesting scenario came from the first visit to Tynecastle since the new stand opened yesterday. I always kind of scratch my head at all ticket away games for us, particularly in grounds where there's likely to be tickets. There's a kind of excessive tickets, if you will. There was a, for some reason, Hearts decided to offer us 1/5 of the stand, and a stand that was at max a third full. They could have easily given us 2 sections and avoided any sorts of problems. They changed at the last minute as well to offer tickets on the day of the match. There wasn't enough seats for people that were actually in the away end. There maybe was, and there was ones and scattered about everywhere, but there wasn't 691 Motherwell fans yesterday, and it seemed like there wasn't enough space for everyone to actually get a seat. The stewards and police then brainlessly get in and just tell people to sit wherever they can. So there's people sitting in the stairs and standing in the stairwells. It's it's a pretty dangerous thing. The stand itself, the main stand, doesn't actually look like it's finished, which I suppose there's maybe a few safety concerns there as well. I actually always been a favourite ground of mine to go to Tynecastle for the atmosphere and everything else, but the new big stand actually seemed to kill any sort of atmosphere. It was a pretty disappointing occasion. Don't get me wrong, it was absolutely Baltic yesterday as well, which possibly made for quite an unpleasant experience for quite a lot of people, and you're not really going to be jumping up and down and making noise unless you're actually just trying to keep yourself warm. But it was a bit of a poor match day experience, and I don't really get the whole... I see Kilmarnock are doing this next week. We've talked about the need at Fir Park and at Motherwell for electronic ticketing, and that kind of helps you target market and a few other things. But for a game like Hearts Motherwell at Tynecastle, where there was 6,000 empty seats at the game yesterday, you don't need to do all ticket affairs. And even worse, next week at Rugby Park, another all ticket game, it must be putting people off actually bothering to go to the football.
Well, there's, you know, you see it on Twitter and things like that, Motherwell fans who don't stay in Motherwell basically, or, you know, the surrounding areas, who maybe can't get to Fir Park during the week. You know, it'd be pointless for them coming down on a Saturday morning. You know, if they're coming from somewhere like Edinburgh, say, coming to Fir Park on a Saturday morning to buy their ticket and then go back through to Edinburgh. So, you know, there's probably going to be people like that who don't bother going to the game because it'd be too much of a pain in the arse for them to come to and from Motherwell, to and from Edinburgh to Motherwell and back again or whatever, you know, depending on where you stay. Because, you know, there's guys who you see on the boards for Stirling and all different sorts of places, Fife and stuff like that. So, you know, it's... That can only be a pain in the arse, especially, as you say, when it's going to be a game like Motherwell Kilmarnock. I mean, I think that stadium holds about 20,000 people. You'll be lucky if there's 5,000 people there, I think. So, you know, it's not really any skin off manos, I suppose, you know, because between us, there's always one of us wanting to go to Fir Park and pick up these tickets, but I can see how it'd be a pain in the arse for other people.
Aye, and no, Spurra makes a good point there, actually, about the idea that it puts people off, because you don't, if you've got an old ticket game and you need to have bought your ticket by, you know, close of play on the Friday for a Saturday game, then it just removes any possibility of anybody waking up on the Saturday morning and deciding to go to the football. Good example is, you know, like our mate Joe, who, you know, plays Saturday football, so doesn't get to a lot of games this season. You're now going into the kind of the spell, particularly, you know, on a day like the day when it's like -6, you're now going into that spell of weather where Joe's football team, like teams right across the country, will find that they're, you know, waking up on a Saturday morning and their game's off. And if the game, if their own teams are playing in all ticketed affairs and they can't get tickets to the game, then you're losing even guys like that, who maybe a couple of years ago where they jumped in their motor and went straight to wherever the game was. So I think it is a bit of a farce, and it just seems, you know, completely uncalled for. As you said, you know, Kilmarnock, it's a decent sized ground, and they've got a tendency similar to our own, and yet you're just going to have the big daft bits, you know, taped off. I mean, it just seems a bit of a farce. I don't know whether it's, you know, if it's just to kind of make things easier for ticket staff, or it makes, you know, it's all to do with health and safety, you know, or whatever it is, but it does, it kind of just, it makes things a lot more tricky, again, for folk who don't live in the local area, and it does, it takes away that ability for someone who perhaps doesn't know what they're doing on the Saturday, or hasn't really given it much thought, or isn't in a position at that stage to buy a ticket. They can't then wake up on the Saturday and decide to go.
Yeah, I thought the decision on the Friday night to then offer tickets on sale, Motherwell didn't actually open the ticket office on Saturday morning, so there was people that had ordered tickets over the phone that were heading down to Fir Park and realising that their tickets weren't there because the office was closed. So Alan Marshall was actually hanging about outside arranging to pass over tickets to people that had pre-ordered them. It's just kind of things that are just, it's pretty amateurish. It's not a kind of dig at anybody at Motherwell. It just seems bizarre practice to keep on moving the goalposts almost on a daily basis building up to the game. I think it just confuses people and basically pisses them off. And you don't really want to be pissing off what is already quite a small following of supporters. It's a bit strange and pretty unnecessary as far as I'm concerned. I can see why Hearts would want to sell their tickets online, and Kilmarnock would want to sell the tickets online. But to home supporters, I don't really think it would be too much of a cost to offer ticket sales on the day of the match. That's what it should be. And I think alienating people, particularly at this time of year when attendances prior to Christmas certainly seem to dip, it just seems utterly bonkers as far as I'm concerned. But there we go. Another wee bit, a source of contention for me yesterday, was that Hearts didn't bother to help promote in any way the minutes applause, which there was Hearts fans in the section beside us taking bows and kind of mocking us for standing up clapping, clearly completely unaware of what was going on. Hearts spent the week tweeting about the Christmas gnomes and everything else. It just shouldn't have really taken very much effort, and the majority of people that we contacted to try and promote it did exactly that. Why Hearts as a football club decided not to was pretty disappointing and doesn't really reflect very well on them as far as I'm concerned. But there we go, that's my gripe about that over. Thank you to everyone that did take part in support. That was appreciated.
No, I understand obviously your gripe at the official Hearts, you know, Twitter and things like that, but I did see, you know, things like the Foundation of Hearts and Jambo's Kickback or whatever, and I did see those sort of accounts retweeted it as well, so fair play to them as well.
No, it's not a dig at the Hearts support in general, but, and don't get me wrong, we've had this situation last year. It was our own club that we were disappointed at for the lack of promotion with the toy drive, and kind of, I think quite rightfully so, felt a wee bit aggrieved by that. So when the shoe's on the other foot, and the club couldn't have done any more this week in terms of constantly mentioning it. So yeah, I don't think it would have taken them much effort, and it's a bit disappointing that it didn't, but we move on. Wednesday night and Partick Thistle, Jay, they've come off a really, really heavy defeat at Rugby Park yesterday. I watched some of the goals there, and yeah, they've had a bit of a nightmare, to be perfectly honest. They've had a very poor season so far as well. Alan Archibald, a manager that I think had very, very high stock value, and it was maybe a wee bit of a surprise that he'd remained at Partick Thistle, but he's certainly not achieving the results and the performances that he's been able to get out of his team in the last couple of seasons. And Partick Thistle are possibly running the risk just now of being cut a wee bit adrift at the foot of the table.
Yep, absolutely. You know, they're not having the best season, and yet I still thought that the result yesterday for Thistle at Rugby Park was, you know, still a little bit surprising, because, you know, obviously Steve Clark's having a bit of an impact there, but, you know, that was a bit of a doing they took. So it's certainly a game that, you know, we can go to, and you know, I think we've raised the bar. I know that it's easy to kind of mention the fact that, like, Willie Moulke's out, and, you know, Cadden might be out, and, you know, you're losing key players. But at the end of the day, we've set the bar quite high this season. You know, we've reached a cup final, and we've had some fantastic performances, you know, against Aberdeen in the quarter final, against Rangers in the semi final, you know, beating Aberdeen up at Pittodrie not too long ago. So, you know, I get that we're a young team, and, you know, there's going to be inconsistencies there. But if you're going to set benchmarks like that, then you should be trying to stick to them. So for me, you know, that kind of success breeds expectation, and for me, this is a game that I expect us to win. I'll be very disappointed if we don't. Of course, if we turn up and play the same type of game that, you know, you witnessed yesterday, it might not go our way, but it's certainly a game that I think that when you look at both clubs' fortunes so far this season, you look at the doing that Thistle have just taken, and you look at the players that we do still have available, regardless of who's missing, it's certainly a game that I'll be disappointed if we don't go take the game to Thistle, look to dominate it, and look to actually take all 3 points.
Buster, in a glass half full type of mentality, we do quite often look at the league table and think, well, that's us, we've pushed on in terms of the playoff spot, or and focus on safety rather than looking up the table, which perhaps on occasions we should do. But I think you look to the games against Partick Thistle, the game against Kilmarnock 3 days later, we've got to be looking to A, target 6 points, and then after that you do begin to get into the mindset that we can look forward and we can look up the table, because they put the points on the board before the turn of the year, we're safe. But if we start dropping points to teams that are struggling at the bottom, we suddenly become one of these teams struggling at the bottom, if that makes any sort of sense.
No, I understand this. You know, after the... I knew, for example, before Saturday that we wouldn't, our position wouldn't change, win or lose. I knew we'd stay fifth in the league there, but as soon as we got beat, I checked the league to see exactly how it was looking. You know, Hearts behind us, St Johnstone, Kilmarnock. So it's, as you say, in a sort of glass half full sort of way. You know, the first thing I did was check and see who's catching us. But you know, as you say, Thistle are in a wee bit of danger of becoming sort of adrift at the bottom there. It's a game that, as Jay says, I fully expect us to go there and win. That's maybe being a bit optimistic, as I say, given the fact that, you know, the records for each of our teams seems to be whoever's at home wins that day. I generally don't believe in those sort of things, you know, home advantage and that, really. But it's blatant to see in Motherwell Partick Thistle games that it appears to be the way it is, unfortunately. But, you know, I expect us to go out there. As you said, six points is ideal. I'd settle for four between the two of them. Either way it came for, you know, 4 points between the two games coming up there would be great. But, you know, as you say, it's important right now to get a couple of points on the board before Christmas. That way, as you say, you know, I hate to even mention it, but if we can definitely be ruled out of finishing in the bottom two, that'd be ideal. So, you know, get that done by about January, that'd be great for me.
Jay, we've already pondered the loss of Louis Moult. First and foremost, his injury just now will rule him out for 4 to 6 weeks, which unfortunately could mean that we've seen the last of Louis Moult in a Motherwell jersey, which of course we all hope that isn't the case, but there's a fair degree of uncertainty there. A massive loss for me yesterday in terms of organisation and structure to the team was Peter Hartley not playing, and also possibly to an equal extent Trevor Carson, who is just, I think he just encourages and instills such a belief from his back four or back three, as the case sometimes is, that Russell Griffiths didn't quite have. Don't get me wrong, I don't think Russell Griffiths as much as put a foot wrong yesterday. He dealt with everything that was thrown at him, bar Lafferty's goal, which was a very good finish. The loss of the guys, the goalkeeper and Peter Hartley, that did seem to disrupt a rhythm quite considerably, which is always going to be the case, I suppose, when you lose two players as significant as that. We'll be definitely hoping they're back, if not Wednesday, by Saturday. It's all a bit unclear just now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Peter Hartley is a tremendous centre-half. You know, we obviously mention it on quite a regular basis, the fact that, you know, selling Ben Hennigan for 400 grand and bringing in Peter Hartley is probably, you know, one of the best bits of business the club's ever done. So you're always going to miss someone like that. And then when you factor in the fact that, you know, Dunn is a relatively young player, Kipri's still a young player, so it's probably compounds the fact that you've lost Peter Hartley in there. Because he will be such an experienced head and organising everything that's going on. And you're right, you know, the roles that goalkeepers play nowadays in terms of, you know, organising the defence as well, means that when you lose Carson, again, you know, not having a go at Russell Griffiths, but he is a younger goalkeeper, perhaps is maybe not quite as vocal, you know, perhaps doesn't have the experience or, you know, the organisational skills of Trevor Carson, and even just the fact that Carson, when the ball's fired into the box, Carson is great at coming and collecting. And that just kind of adds a wee bit of, you know, confidence and a wee bit of support to your back line. So you're always going to miss guys like that. And it's obviously really, really important that they get back as soon as possible. But that said, you know, that's when you're looking to other guys to step in and to take their opportunities. Obviously, it wasn't the case yesterday. You know, Griffiths aside, because, you know, as you've said, he's dealt with what he could deal with. But, you know, a game at, you know, for Hill, if those guys are to miss out, then, you know, you need to look at the guys that are going to come in and replace them, and you need to be expecting them to give 110% and to put in the kind of performance that means that, you know, Stephen Robinson maybe has then a dilemma when Hartley and Carson do come back.
Yeah, Busted, I think the defensive area is maybe one of the few areas of the pitch that we actually don't have many players that could naturally step in. I know Stephen Hamill's been pretty patient in the sidelines. When he has come in, he's done very well. With the exception of him, I don't see many defensively, much defensive cover on standby ready to come in.
What was that noise, man?
I wanted as my new message, Tom.
No, as you said, so...
Between that and the monkey off my shoulder from Jay earlier on, we're having a good night.
I think it was a body part, but I just couldn't remember which it was.
As you said, though, I take it McHugh stepped in at centre and a half on Saturday, yeah?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody was expecting that, to be fair. I think it's because of the three centre halves that we play generally. It looks as if we're a bit short there, but I think in general the squad size is pretty decent. But you know, when whether or not you think McHugh's a better centre and a half or centre mid, he's obviously playing central midfield this year, but he's having to drop back there because we've got we've got one injury basically in that department there. But I don't know. I also think we're a bit light up front. I don't really mean light. I think we'll get Fisher. Other than that, I don't really know where Petrovicius actually plays, whether he's a winger or a forward or what. I don't know where he plays. But other than Fisher, I think we're a wee bit light up front as well. We've got a ton of midfielders, but there's a fair decent amount of defenders there as well, but it's just that because we play three centre and a half, so we end up looking as if we're a bit short. But I don't know how long Hartley's going to be out for. Has that even been mentioned at all?
No, I've not actually seen that. As you were speaking there, I was having a wee look through to see if I could see any quotes from the manager or anything else as to how long he's going to be out for, but it seems a bit up in the air. I know Trevor Carson had a last-minute fitness test, but I don't know whether... It seemed pretty conclusive that he was going to miss out even Thursday, Friday time, so you kind of hope that he's closer, or you would assume that he's closer to coming back than Peter Hartley is, but it's all a wee bit up in the air.
But the only thing I heard, was obviously when it was announced Hartley was missing out, Stevie Robinson said he's got a wee bit of a foot injury, but there was, as you say, there was no timescale was mentioned, so I don't know what's happening there. But I think numbers wise we're not too bad. Callum McHugh can step back in there, no bother. But it's kind of strange that it's kind of weird we've not actually heard whether or not Pierre Hartley's coming back or whatever for Wednesday's yet.
Yeah, gee, you'd have to assume that we will possibly in the next couple of days with the pre-match Thistle press conference, I would imagine, would be held in Tuesday morning. Just a wee bit more about Hartley, and I think what was noticeable yesterday was his influence in the guys like Charles Dunn and Cedric Kiepre. Carroll McHugh, for all, I think he's a pretty comfortable centre-half. He did very well when he came into the back four at the back end of last season. Anytime he's played this season at the back, he's done very well as well. But I think Hartley's guile and ability to talk players through the game can't be underestimated.
No, not at all. As I said earlier, particularly in the case of Kiepre, it is easy to forget his age because he has built a brick shithouse. So when you've got somebody like Peter Hartley alongside him, talking him through the game, keeping everything organised, then it's going to be massively beneficial, and it's going to be the kind of thing that you're then only going to really notice when it's not there, which was evidently the case yesterday. As I said, I've not yet actually seen the highlights, but Graham Barnstable,
just don't bother.
Fair enough. But Graham Barnstable and Lewis Irons, both made the point, I'm sure, that Kiepre and McHugh probably should have been able to stop the goal, or stop Lafferty on his way through. So it did sound as though there was a wee bit of a weakness there that Hearts have managed to exploit. And Hartley is just a really, really good defender at this level. So as I said earlier, you're always going to miss somebody like that. But we do have other options. We do have players that can either, whether it is McHugh, whether Hamill comes back in. I don't know if Plummer still exists. But those are the guys that we should be you know, putting a little bit of pressure on to step in and to show that they're able to cover for Peter Hartley. So yeah, hopefully we do find out with the press conference and things like that the kind of extent of Hartley's knock, but he is certainly a player that you know, an important part of the team, a very important part of that defence, and a player that you would hope will be back sooner rather than later.
I think that if you get, you know, the two of them back for Wednesday, I'd be feeling a lot more confident about the game anyway. But it's I think, you know, if we get even if we just get maybe Carson or Hartley, one of them back, basically, I'll be feeling a bit more confident about the game. But I think as bad as I said, it's despite not being there, I think it's blatantly obvious that we missed at least one of our influence.
Looking at the Kilmarnock game on the Saturday, it's always very difficult to preview a game when we've not had the game before, if you were. But Rugby Park Bust has been a very happy hunting ground for us in recent times. Even when we've been kind of lacking form, we seem to be able to go there and dig out a result. Steve Clark, it's been a bit of a mixed bag for Kilmarnock so far, but yesterday's result will certainly have them in much better spirits. They're still down there and they've still got a battle in their hands. He's obviously not been able to put a full stamp in his team in the sense that he's not had a transfer window yet. I noticed Chris Boyd getting a couple of goals yesterday. It's almost infuriating because the amount of shite that guy has talked about Scottish football and has given a platform to do so on a weekly basis. To actually see him succeed at anything, actually, is quite dispiriting. But for all I'm saying, they've got a very good record. It's always a tight game. It's always a close game. And you wouldn't expect a great deal of difference when the two teams come up against each other on Saturday at Rugby Park.
No, I don't think there will be much of a difference there. As you said, Steve Cox got them going pretty decently. I think they've won their last two games. Before that, I think they were absolutely dreadful against Aberdeen, I read somewhere. We do have a very good record there, and it's, again, it's one of my pet peeves in that shitey Plastic Park. Only beaten to be the worst park in the league by Hamilton's, obviously, but you know, I don't know who's going. Spar, are you going to make it? No, you got a wedding or something, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got a wedding.
Well, I assume, Jay, you're going. I'll be coming down with you. So there's, you know, it's always a good day out. There's, you know, we've got friends down there. So it's regardless of the result, it's always a good day out. But I honestly, as you say, it's hard to judge these ones. I don't know how this will go. I don't know what sort of Kilmarnock will turn up. As you said, they've not had a chance to really bring any players in other than that Yusuf Malumbo guy, who apparently had a good game at the weekend there as well. So. But it's going to be hard not to have a good game when you pump somebody 5-1. But it's, again, depending on the result on Wednesday, I'd like to say that I'll be confident going into the game. But we'll see what happens here. But I think you know, as I say, 4 points out of the six will do me over these two games anyway.
Jay, sometimes I get it right, and the last four visits to Rugby Park, we've won in each of these four games, and on every occasion we've won by one goal. So I think that is even more of an indicator, if you needed one, that Motherwell Kilmarnock games tend to be quite stuffy, tight affairs. But for all we moan about the plastic pitch, we do seem to have a very good knack of winning on it.
Aye, well, that's it. I mean, Kilmarnock are a club very similar to ourselves, you know, in terms of the size of the club, the fan base, all that kind of thing. And that kind of does seem to be reflected in the games themselves, because as you said, you know, they do tend to be quite close, scrappy affairs. It'll be interesting, you know, we're obviously talking about guys who are possibly coming back for injury, so it'll be interesting to see if the plastic pitch has any bearing on that, you know, whether Peter Hartley would maybe play on the Saturday if we were in grass, but, you know, they might take the decision just to give him an extra week, so we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it. It's a completely different type of game to Wednesday's. If, you know, I've obviously used the fact that Kilmarnock cost Partick Thistle as reasoning why we should be going to Partick Thistle looking to do the same. So by the same token, you know, you kind of need to take yesterday's result, you know, Killie victory, as a sign that they are, you know, maybe starting to progress and starting to put things together, and it will be a very tricky game. But, you know, you're right, between Chris Boyd somehow, you know, getting paid by broadcasters and newspapers to talk absolute mince, and Dom Thomas's Twitter account, then it's certainly a game that, you know, I really hope we win.
Yeah, there was actually Noel Gallagher was on Super Sunday this afternoon, and it was quite incredible that he managed in his 20 minutes or so of television time managed to talk more sense than I've seen Chris Boyd or Chris Commons talk at any point when I've seen them on the television over the course of the... Chris Boyd is also a part of Sky Sports' Scottish Football Matters programme, which single-handedly should be responsible for the demise of Scottish football, because it is that bad. It's the worst bit of broadcasting that's ever been put out there.
Do you know what, as well, we see on Saturday, I'm going to ask, you know, Clarko and whatever there, whoever turns up, it must infuriate them to see Chris Boyd on the telly constantly talking about Rangers.
And referring to them as us as well.
Constantly. What a wanker.
He's not very good, but it was good when he missed the penalty at the end of last season. That was quite a pleasant moment. Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for this week. As I say, it's always quite hard to preview a game when you've got another game in between, but we've given it a bash. We hope that we've got a positive week ahead, and I don't think there's a kind of closer. You can't get too carried away at the fact that we have lost heavily at Celtic Park. We've lost to a Hearts team that were perhaps struggling for form quite a bit, but I think the overriding feeling is one of positivity around the club. The place is, there's still a buzz. The cup run been highly responsible for that, so we look ahead to a busy week, and let's hope we can get some positive results.
No, just on the back of that as well, I seen a thing, you know, that said something like points gained in the last six matches, and Motherwell were actually bottom of it with four. But as you said, you know, we have had some tricky matches there, so it's about time that we turned that around and started putting some points on the board.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't feel like it's time for any panic buttons to be reached for, but I suppose that could all change with a few negative results, so the best way to solve that is by winning both the games this week.
I mean, we all knew that it was going to be a difficult December, but it's certainly, you know, it's not a month that you can just write off. You know, these are two games that I kind of agree with Buster. I think 4 points out of the six for this week would be a fantastic return, but it's certainly not, you know, a massive chore. It's certainly something that I think we're more than capable of doing. And it'll be interesting actually to see, you know, what Steve Clarke's managed to change at Kilmarnock, because they certainly do seem to be making some progress. But then you just have to look at some of our performances and, you know, the cup run this season to see that we've made a lot of progress as well. So they'll certainly not fancy, you know, facing against what is still a strong Motherwell side. So probably I get a good chance of being quite a good game on Saturday. And like Buster, happy if we take 4 points for the six.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Well, we'll be back the Monday following the Kilmarnock game to go over both the fixtures this week, and then also look ahead to the fixture against Dundee and possibly the fixture at Ibrox that follows just after Christmas. But until then, you've been listening to the MSC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. Birthday, are you lonely yet?
surprise me. Don't tell me you're afraid.